Hey, welcome to the Swine Time Podcast. I'm here with my friend Gary Robinson. Gary is a stand-up comedian, but he is also an Emmy Award-winning nominated.
he gets that wrong. Every time he introduces me, he gets that wrong. Like, it's consistent. I was nominated.
He was nominated for an Emmy. This guy was nominated for an Emmy. And here he is on my podcast.
Yeah, and it's a great honor to be here because I see you've spared no expense at all to produce this. Yeah. Like this is totally quiet, you know? You got one of the best white walls around in town to produce this thing. Like, the most expensive thing here is his suit. Like, that's the only expense he spares. No makeup. Well, I already look great, obviously. I like this. Can you see this on camera?
Can we see that? No,
you can't? Okay, he's got this, like, leopard print stool that it looks like it's from the 70s. It doesn't look like you could find it anywhere. So that's pretty impressive.
Somebody gave that to me. Everything I have, somebody gave to me. I'm a frugal guy with some generous friends.
And he's not kidding about what he said about the park. Like, he has a really funny joke about parking.
I said, man, moving to LA, it's very dangerous. I heard gunshots in front of my apartment. I didn't even call 911. I said, good. Another parking spot.
And that's perfect because there's no parking within a mile of here.
It's tough.
Unbelievable. Like, I wanted to kill somebody just parking here.
Yeah.
So
you and the parking tickets around here are freaking outrageous, man. But enough about the parking, Gary. Let's get into you, man. So tell me something. How long have you been in the entertainment industry? You've made some shorts, some music videos.
Well, I started interning for Quincy Jones Entertainment back in, you know, 5 years ago. And then after that, I worked in advertising, then for a production company. Then I produced thousands of promos for CBS, Sony, Universal, all different TV programs. And then I got kind of bored being in the behind the camera, you know, being in the edit bay all day long. Like, I did all the promos for Blind Date, a dating program. You would have been perfect for that.
I was on third wheel.
You were on third wheel?
I was on fifth wheel.
Fifth wheel.
I got both the girls. They both said yes to me.
Are you serious?
I swear to God, fifth wheel.
That's impressive. He's very.
They want me to even come back another time, but I was so wrapped up in being on fifth wheel. I mean, it took so much. It was very tense, you know, because it's like. It's one thing to risk getting rejected, but with the, you know, so I had a job at a cookie company at the time, and the two girls that ran the cookie company, we had a meeting every Monday or whatever. They came down, they were sisters, and they say, okay, well, we've decided that Brian needs to go on a dating show. We think he'd be very funny on a dating show. And I went on the fifth wheel, and the one girl was a brunette and very voluptuous. I said my two, because they pick, like, which type of girl you like. Well, at the time I liked Heather Graham and Selma Hayek, and so the one girl was, you know, they were both like kind of regular versions of those girls, you know.
Yeah.
Now here's what I didn't like about the show, though, was that the other guys I was on it with, so it was me and another guy, he was awesome dude, and then a third guy shows up. Well, I like these dudes, and I didn't want like the fact that they're picking us. You know what I mean? That they're not everybody's getting picked, the whole picking type shit, you know? Yeah. So then what happened was I ended up, the one girl that looked like Heather Graham said something to me early on the day that made me think she didn't like me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. And the other guy liked her. I said, okay, you want to pick her and I'll pick the other girl? Because I knew me and the other girl was going to like each other. And so he said, yes. So I picked the other girl. And then somehow the other girl, they both picked me. So then the other one was... So then, of course, the producers had me say, you know, I said, well, I'm looking forward to being like Hugh Hefner and having a threesome.
And, and you're being honest.
Yeah, I was being honest.
One of your favorite jokes is he goes, what is that? There's something about girls who sleep with you within 2 hours.
Yeah, I have a theory about girls that put on 2 hours. They're my type.
And that's absolutely true, because I've known him for a long time, and... I have one psychic ability. I can tell girls that he's messed around with before he tells me. So I'll show a photo. I'll show a photo to him. And he'll say, "Yeah, a few years ago."
Well, what was just happening? You were casting a project, right? And
it's happened a number of times.
You can tell this. I like this story.
Well, here, let's get into a few of the other ones. Okay. So we're at the Comedy Store. We're down in the hallway. there's this guy trying to pick up this girl right in front of us. And Brian's all, what a douchebag. And I said, why? Because he's doing exactly what I've seen you do 100 times. There's another time we were at a bar, and then there's this really pretty girl that he was making eyes with, and the bartender goes, oh. Hey, Brian, stop making eyes with my daughter. The other time I'm at the comedy store, these just go on and on. Like,
I had to tell her to stop making my eyes at me, and then I'll stop making eyes.
I think those were out of fear. Those were she wasn't flirting with you. There's the so I'm gonna go up at the comedy store, and I see outside this girl that I dated like twice, and then he pops his head up behind her. He ran into this girl I went on 2 dates with and brought her to the comedy store to a show I was in. We keep crossing paths with these girls.
Oh, yeah, I was walking and I saw this girl. Hey, you want to go to the show? And boom.
See, he talks about making approaches, and he really does it. You do it all the time. Like, is that what you do all day long? Is this like,
man, I should do something else with my life? But no, I did. What happened with me, Gary? Is I regret. So if a girl walks by that I think is interesting and I don't, then I might spend a day or two. Oh, I should have went up to her.
That's right out of Indecent Proposal. You're like the billionaire who didn't want to lose the married girl, so he went all out to get her. That's the whole story, really. Is that?
I need to see that movie. Yeah, I know Woody Harrelson's in it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's a great. It's a really good movie. Robert Redford, well done. Yeah,
Robert
very well Redford, done.
Millionaire.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got to see that movie because I think it was I never saw it when I was when it came out.
Directed by Adrian Lin, great director, really well filmed.
Cool.
Yeah.
I need to see that, man. You're a great director. You're awesome.
Well, if you see photos of him online and he looks really really good, I probably took notes. Yeah. I made him look too good.
Hey, there's no such thing, man. Well, you know what? It's tough, though, for the comedy because I'm like, but it's good. I mean, it's good, but, you know, it's like, you really make me, you show some good shots of me, man. I want you to get a feature film so that
I can cast it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that day, man. I don't care if I'm the guy working at the coffee bean. I'm just going to be wearing this suit, though, as I'm working at the coffee bean. But
no, there's definitely roles for you. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. You know. I liked, but you know, you did a couple projects, and you sent me Facebook, some girls were on Facebook. You were casting. I like this story. So you're on Facebook, casting, you know, looking at people you're casting.
Yeah. I just want her to see this.
Nobody, they ain't gonna see this.
They might.
They don't like me no more.
Okay, these girls don't like me no more. That's the other thing. Wait, so what? Like, you get into. You don't have a lot of long term relationships. Right?
I don't have a lot of long term relationships.
Why do you think that is?
Could it be my ego? Could it be I'm not stable? Could it be? I mean, these girls just don't have their shit together.
these girls ain't loyal.
Yeah,
what's that song?
Yeah, these girls ain't loyal. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's two times. Well, there's a couple projects I worked on, and coincidentally, he has dated the girls that I'm doing the projects with.
Yes, the girls you cast. So you had to message me to make sure that they were professionals. I said they are very professional. You know. but I was laughing because I'm like, dang, what's the chances?
It's a very small town.
Yeah.
It's amazing that I predicted 3 times the girls you've slept with.
Yeah, because one of them, you sent me 4 different, and one of them I must have met at some point, but the other 3, and so, yeah, this isn't going to help my situation here, Gary. Why are we talking about this?
You can edit this out if you want.
No, I don't want to.
So, back to the girl that I dated that you brought to the comedy store.
Okay.
So how did that happen? So she was walking down the street. You're walking down the street.
She was walking. I was right by. I like to stop at that. There's a bar called Cabo Cantina. It's okay. On the way to the comedy store.
Oh, right down the street.
And they have UFC fight. So I usually on my way to the comedy store, I'll try to like watch part of the UFC fight. So I'm watching a little UFC fight, and I see this girl walking. Hey. And what you doing? I'm about to go home. I said, well, why do you want to go home? I'm going to comedy club. You want to go to the comedy club? okay. And then, I mean, so, it was a little more dialogue than that, yeah, but that's basically what it was.
Yeah.
And she's a nice person.
Yeah, totally nice. And really, I would give it to them, very good taste as far as, like, in beautiful women, right?
Yeah.
So dude, this girl is very pretty.
Yeah.
So you brought her to the Comedy Store.
I brought her to the Comedy Store, and then she sees you, and she goes, I know him. Oh, you know Gary? Yeah, I know him.
What were you thinking when she said that?
I didn't know. Okay. I thought, you know a lot of people, so I'm like, oh, cool. And I said, where do you know him from?
Didn't say anything.
Didn't say anything. So she's just kind of like, okay, I don't know. Maybe it was something I was supposed to know. Maybe an Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. You know, you never know about people. What could it be? Yeah. You know.
And so, by the way, I'm not an Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, he's not an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just.
I've actually never. Oh, that's interesting. I've never had drugs or alcohol before.
In your whole life?
Yeah, in my whole life.
So you and Donald Trump are a lot alike.
I wouldn't say that.
Oh, okay.
I would say, well, first of all, he's probably on Adderall or some other drug that, you know, he's not talking about.
Who knows? But,
anyway, so back to her, and we'll get back to that after.
So then I go upstairs and I talk to you, and you say, yeah, I met her on it was a Tinder.
What was,
or something?
No, what was it?
Bumble
it was,
or Tinder or?
It was eHarmony. Like
eHarmony.
eHarmony, where I met my ex-wife. I'm currently suing them for false advertising. So I met her on eHarmony.
Oh, that's rough. And
we didn't have enough harmony, apparently.
And so, yeah. So then you said that's where we met. And then, so then I was like, so now I have all this information. And now I'm not, I mean, now I've lost, like, interest in her.
Why?
Because
you could be my sloppy second.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I might end up being yours one way or another, even if I don't know it.
Yeah, you have.
You cast a wide net.
Do you live in LA? You looking to date? I had another friend. It's funny how that happens, you know. Like, but anyways, but.
That's the irony. It's like a guy that looks like me and a guy that looks like this, we get the same kind of girls, ironically. I wonder why. So you're at the comedy store.
Well, they think you have money.
No, it's my great personality.
Yeah. Oh, that's true, yeah. They think I have money.
You dress well and I got the great personality. Yeah. So you're in the belly room, comedy store.
In the belly room, and then you tell me that, so now I'm like, oh, this is so much fun. I'm really happy. Like, this is so much to play with, you know? So I must have asked her a couple times more. Yeah, so how do you get your... You know?
And finally, this girl's got a heavy accent, too. So it's really
Russian
adorable.
Her,
yeah, it's kind of like Croatian.
So then, you know, I gave her a ride back home, and that was that, and... Stay in contact sociably, nicely, but, you know.
But you haven't made a move. Why didn't you make a move?
Why didn't I make a move? Well, the fact that that you dated her, I thought, was kind of awkward for me, right?
Well, I didn't
Not
sleep
really,
with her.
But, yeah.
I didn't sleep with her. Wouldn't
and
be
then,
a second.
But you couldn't really, she's kind of a, just not the type you're going to make a move on.
Right. And that's the problem. I kind of ghosted her after 2 dates because I could tell that it wasn't going to get romantic, there's a wall up.
She's more of a friend, or like a friendly person.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
And you're in the same industry, acting and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's good to stay in contact. You know.
Yeah, maybe. She's a cool person.
Yeah, very nice.
But not the. You ain't.
But not our type.
Yeah. Not you. Hey, I was with her for 2 hours. Nothing happened to see you.
Yeah. It normally takes me 2 dates to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I have to get to know the person. You're lucky that that doesn't matter.
It don't matter. That's like, I mean, I think about some of these girls, I got to be honest, some of these girls I've went out with that I've spent more time with, their person, like, you know, like this one girl, I mean, I know this is a weird thing to pick on, but it was her driving. She was a very selfish driver. Mm-hmm. Like, she would cut around and this. I'm riding with her getting scared. And I, you know, I'm average.
Asian?
No. No, she wasn't Asian, but she was from another country, of course. But
what country?
Spain.
Oh, okay.
But her driving, and it was like, and I thought to myself, man, the way that she acted, the way that she talked, had she not looked the way she looked, I would have walked away. Like, isn't it weird how guys are like that? We will tolerate. It's like klepto, right?
Yeah.
It's like klepto, man. I dated klepto. She was beautiful, stunning. But, you know, and she did, you know, she did all this crazy stuff. And I'd stay with her for 6 months, you know. Like, I mean, that is a long time. And that is a solid commitment.
And this is like a PSA. Girls, if you're super attractive, we'll put up with a lot of really bad stuff. So you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you can put up. So, but I don't know. And the sad thing is, if those girls would come back today, I'd be open to it.
Yeah.
But it sucks because there's so many, like, cool people that, you know, you kind of like. And at the same time, sometimes we're like, there are things that do disgust me about, like, some women that are, you know, that are attractive. Like, yesterday I did this gig at Dice House, and I thought this girl was cute, and then she went on stage and just bombed her, like, wasn't good comedian.
And then that's unattractive.
That's sick. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
That's gross. You know?
Well, here's another difference.
Well, it's one thing if they bomb, but the material they choose to bomb or what they think, you know?
Yeah.
So.
See, you'll date a comedian. Like,
I've never dated a comedian.
But you've messed around with comedians.
I mean, if they're looking to, you know, get the funny in them, yes. But
a little bit.
A little bit. You know, if they're
looking. Well, here's the weird thing. Like, that's a dangerous thing because you're dealing with somebody who's very vocal and is going to put your stuff out there on stage, even if it goes south. Like, you probably have some old flings talking about you.
Yeah, and you know what, though? I talk about them. Because ultimately, I'm on stage. Like,
well,
you know,
it's fair then. You guys
you know,
are trading.
Well, if it's a I don't know why. I like actresses. I'm into actresses. Comedians, I don't like comedians. I did because I like. Oh shit! Hang on. That's gonna get. Oh shit! There goes my career here. The fucking. Oh, did you hear Brian doesn't like girl comedians?
For serious dating.
You know, for dating because. I'm so close to comedy. Like acting, I'm an actor, yes, but it's different. You're not going to see them at the. Maybe you get cast on a project with them, but it's different worlds, right? But comedy, it's so tight, it's so small, you're going to see them again. If it doesn't work, you're going to run into them again.
Yeah,
you know,
it's very small town.
Yeah, and to me, I like a feminine woman. I like feminine because I'm masculine.
Yeah.
And I like feminine women, okay? I feel that there's a certain masculinity that goes into stand-up comedy.
There is. Yeah.
And you see, there are the most feminine comic I know is Angela Johnson. She carries that and her fan base follows her and she is more of
I saw her for the first time a comedy special the other day.
Yeah.
Very good.
And she carries the most femininity out of the comedians that I think of when I think. And she, now the cool thing about her is she also has a tomboy aspect to her.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hang out with her, she's calling you dude and this, like, so you're bantering like a bro with her.
Yeah.
But she carries the most, she's the most feminine female comedian. I think that's why she really excelled because she's bringing a little something different where I feel a lot of times there's a certain masculinity that goes into comedy, and I don't really. It's funny, but I'm not attracted to that. It doesn't like get me going. I like a girl that's walking down the street, picks up a flower, and puts it in her hair.
So it'd be nicer to see female comedians bring more of the femininity into the comedy and not be so aggressive.
Yeah,
and like,
for me,
you know,
for me.
Yeah.
You know, for me. I even think Ellen DeGeneres is a little like that. She's lesbian and all, but she has a little more of a feminine. The way
softer,
she dances, she's
like
softer.
Nicer,
she's softer.
Very nice.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
I think what happens is a lot of the girls try to compete with the dudes,
mm-hmm.
and because of our energy, right?
Yeah.
For this or my side, so many guys are misogynistic comics. We can't. You
I wouldn't know any like that.
Yeah, you especially. So
I'm dialing that down. I've seen the light. I'm working on a clean set right now.
You see, that's something about comedy, man. It teaches you who you are because for a while, you know, Gary was doing spots and I kept telling Gary, be you like you are with me. You know, I keep saying, and people have told me the same thing, especially earlier on in my career.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying so hard to find what my voice was because a lot of times it's easier for people to see who you are than for you to see who you are because we have ideas of who we are or who we want to be or who we think we... But an audience member can kind of, you know, and from the start, not even audience, just a person, just can kind of cue into you. And if it's not, when you're not being really yourself, I mean, there was the famous story of, Joey Diaz was one of the guys that was, they caught more on the parking lot, just busting up, and then he would, you know, get on stage and be a little, not quite as he was in the parking lot. Yeah. The same was said about Bernie Mac. Bernie Mac, they had a lot of stories about Bernie. So Bernie was street funny. He's out there, he's working as a chef, and he's hilarious, killing everybody. And then, and he said this in his book, he said he would get on stage and he wouldn't be Bernie.
It was tough to be the same on stage.
It's tough. So it takes, and then we have, and then sometimes you put up a little a facade of who you are because you're in front of the crowd. It's a whole different thing. And that's why I'm saying with you, you know, I'm always thinking, man, Gary, just be you, the good dude you are. And well, that's gonna.
But that's the line we draw. We're trying to figure out what's the funniest in ourselves. And for me, for a while, and you know, up till very recently still, like I find it very funny. Like people say I'm very different off stage from on.
Yes, right? 1,000%.
Yeah, yeah. So I find it very interesting to be, you know, be a pretty nice person off stage and then go on and be like out of, you know, racist, misogynist, over the top. Kind of like a Donald Trump character.
Yeah.
you know, just like over the top, mean in a different way. And then, people can see through that it's a performance somewhat. So I do get a lot of laughs. But then now I'm trying to bring in the, I can be kind of nicer and still get the laughs. So I'm working on that.
Yeah. More. Yeah. I mean, it's.
It's always a work in progress.
It's so. Always. You know, and maybe what you're bringing on stage is like your dark side, right? Because in real life, you can't really express some of those thoughts and feelings, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's real life. You got to play. You know, it's tough. So I think that you're bringing some of your dark side onto the stage. Now, and the stage is the where, because jokes are dark. Jokes are mean. There's always a victim in them.
Well, it's creating tension also. Yeah. So, like, I'm getting antagonistic with the crowd because I'm trying to get them emotional in one way or another, even with the things I'm saying or maybe directly addressing them.
Yeah.
So I'm well aware of what I'm doing. You know, it can go south because I can turn them off, but you know, a lot of times it works really well. You know, so
it's a mix.
I think that there is a way to. I'm still defining what I want to do as far as like, do I want to bring this whole nice guy like on stage, and I'll probably do better overall, but it won't be as satisfying artistically.
And see, that's the thing. Those are decisions you make because we're all in different. You know, because we all go for different things. You know, and you have a lot of other things going, so. So stand-up, per se, isn't your bread and butter as far as, you know, probably right now, at least your income and stuff like that.
It's
you
all
know,
video.
It's yeah,
all
so you're doing production. Video, you're doing editing. I mean, stand-up to you is like, you're having fun with it, you're getting a lot of gigs, you're doing your thing, it's a creative outlet.
And it helps with writing. And I'll say that. Yeah. So I've written, you know, I've produced and edited probably 4,000 promos for different TV programs and like dozens of commercials and videos and stuff. And you don't get the real time feedback of how good your work is, because you know, okay, I'll edit something, it'll be seen by a few million people online, you know, on TV, but I won't know what people are thinking about it. And the cool thing with stand-up is you go right on stage, you've written something and you're seeing the immediate feedback of how well it works, so your writing becomes better and better. So just from comedy writing, from that standpoint, there's nothing better than stand-up, I don't think.
Yeah,
as far as like writing,
you're right, because you know, I've written some scripts and stuff, and you know, it's just not this. It's nothing like sitting down there. I love when I come up with a winner, and I know it's a winner.
That's
right?
The best feeling in for me, probably you too, in doing stand up is when you've written something new, you bring it to the stage, it kills, and then you say, oh, it's like money in the bank.
Yeah,
I worked on something, it's great, and I can keep using it over and over again for a long time.
Yeah, man, that's a very rewarding thing, you know. And. And so, you know, there's a lot of aspects. It's the writing, and then also, dude, like you said, it's finding out who you are, you know. And my first 5 years, I would say, was just a straight bomb fest, you know, because I started at 22-year-old.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know who, you know, I'm a squirrely little guy from Ohio, and, you know, this and that. And then I didn't know who I was as a person, and I hadn't really...
When are you going to find that out?
I'm not. That's why I'm going to keep doing comedy till I die.
He's got a ways to go. There's a lot of development going on. I've seen it. A lot of personal development.
Yeah, man.
Gone through a lot.
Yeah, I really have, you know, and that's the thing I like too about comedy, man. No matter what I've been through, you know, comedy's always been there. It's the one, like I say that comedy's my number one and everything else is a side chick.
Yeah.
You know, the like, because the women in my life have come and gone, right? And stand-up has just been, boom, it's there, boom. And, you know, but it's also tough as a comic because you're, you know, as much as, you know, I travel and stuff, it's like, it's just a different life. And it's, and to find security in the business, you know, which, you know, I think is a very important thing for people is, man, for me is that right now, I can't be thinking about, it's a little selfish, but I got to have security on myself with my career and it's,
yeah.
You know, and, but yeah, man.
It's got to be tough at your level. You're a very good stand-up comedian, been doing it for a long time, you crush all the time, but we're at a place where now you have all these kind of big names and stars and TV stars and people coming back in, and they're probably taking a lot of the spots that frankly you'd get if you had a bigger name. So
yes.
That's why, you know, I guess you're working on your career and trying to get more acting roles and stuff like that. That'll help with the stand-up, too.
That's why I like subscribe to this podcast.
Subscribe, right?
Right now. Hollywood know that. But you're 1,000% right, because there's different levels, right? Mm-hmm. And where I'm at now is I'm having good shows. On the weekdays, I'm headlining.
And you can do it. You're doing, like, 45 minutes an hour.
Yeah,
like, which is great, by the way. There's not a lot of comedians that have a solid hour. Okay,
yeah,
just realistically. And frankly, even some of the veteran comedians, when they put some of their mediocre specials on Netflix, whatever, they're not ready. They're just rushing it out. They might have writers, a team of writers helping them out and stuff. But it's not easy to have a really good hour. It takes a long time to develop. You got a good hour.
Yeah.
I've seen it, and it works well and stuff, but it's like you're still building up that fan base.
I'm still building the fan base. I'm still making the hour better. And it's tough because it's just trying to figure out what is going to take you to the next step in your career. How do you get there so you don't get stuck, plateau? How do you get to the next spot? And it is, for me, because, you know, you got the big dogs and I'm watching them. And now there are nights when I go to the Laugh Factory in the Comedy Store and I'm not booked.
Yeah.
And that hurts. However,
because you know you can hold your own with these guys, however big their name is.
Yes, but now some of the guys are so fantastic.
Yeah, there are some.
There are some, like, yeah. I was just at the Laugh Factory this week on Wednesday. It was Jay Davis's birthday. The
yeah, I saw that lineup.
That lineup was so packed. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna sit here and be a student. And a lot of times,
when Bill Burr is up, it's a good time to be a student.
Yeah,
he's like one of the world's best. Easily.
I mean, you got Bill Burr. You had Orny Adams.
Orny Adams, one of my other favorites.
Yeah, Donnell Rawlings was on there.
Destroyer.
I mean, it was like, okay, I'm going to be now a student. And I've been, when I started back, there was a club called Dublin's, and they had a comedy night. It was the best underground comedy show.
Yeah, that's where
Jay
Davis got it.
Yeah, Dane started there.
Yeah.
And I was just starting, and I would watch then. And you know, so it's cool because you do slowly see yourself accomplishing your goals, okay? You start off in open mics, bringer shows. Okay, you're past that. Now people are like, oh, man, you're funny.
Yeah, I bypass the open mics.
Yeah, well, I'll still go to a mic from time to time because I have a new stuff.
Well, it's good to work out stuff.
I want to say it out loud before I say it to the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to make sure before I'm in front of people who are paying that I have it worked out. You know, I will go down to a Hollywood hotel or somewhere like that where I know it's just going to be 10 comics.
Yeah.
And I'll sit there and I'll say it out loud. But yeah, where I'm at now, because it's even like since the Comedy Store got good, I was getting when the comedy, you know, because the bigger comics come in and they push me, so I push you, you know, they get the spots, so it's a constant fight to get on stage to work up, and you know, and so what I'm doing is just learning from the big dogs how did they get there, what are they doing, what are they talking about now, how can I you know, improve my game to get there. And then, you know, some stuff is out of your control. I mean, it's like some bookers will, I look at it like, because some bookers will be into you and some won't. Some will be, you know, there's sometimes there's nepotism going on.
You can't please everybody.
You can't please everybody. And so I just look at it like, look, I'm going to outlast whoever's doing what.
Yeah.
So
and that's how, half the game. Yeah. The people who fail are the ones who quit.
Yeah, because there's been, I mean, when I look back when I started, mm-hmm. I mean, God, there were so many guys that were just so funny. And they just, they
didn't go.
Yeah, and they should be, and it's, and you know, I'm sure some of them are like, man, Swinehart's still doing it? Like, what, I never thought he would, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's why I have compassion for a lot of the newer comics that are struggling, because I felt like, man, I could have been one of the, I could have been one of the worst comics in LA when I started. And that's saying a lot. Because, you know, they say 90% of the, there's this joke, it's something like this, 90% of the comics in LA, man, they are awful. But the other 100,000 are awesome. Because that's how many comics are out here.
Yeah,
and it's true, there's a lot of like ones that are just, you know, but then, but part of it's just putting in the time, man, and
well, it's like anything. You work at it, and you do see it. Like, when you see, when people put in the work, they get better and better. It's kind of like, you know, I do a lot of different things, like photography, whatever.
Yes.
Like,
Great photographer. I'm always sending people your way.
Well, you don't need to. It's okay.
I know,
but,
you're overbooked.
Yeah, but, you know, even my photography, I work on it over time. I can see the improvement over years and years of doing photography. And then you have these breakthroughs where something will get better, and you'll figure out something with the lighting that's better, and then you just get better with your framing. So you do get better at everything by working at it. And if you're working in the right way, in a smart way,
yeah.
You're trying to figure out, okay, what's taking me in the right direction? Is this making me better? Is this making me get booked more? Is this making me get more laughs or whatever?
Yeah.
So everything's a work in progress, and the work pays off in stand-up as well as everything else. So.
How do you find time? I mean, you're doing, so you work, so you also work for Scorsese, right? You work
I did some work. I'm not working currently for him. I work for his foundation. I did the logo for his World Cinema project. There's some stuff on my website I cut for him, a sizzle reel, several other projects that aren't public. But, I work for his foundation. And, you know, I've been doing, you know, video work for 25 years. So I've built up a pretty long resume of all types of stuff.
And so you've built this resume. You've done all these awesome jobs, 4,000 editing jobs, all these commercials. And then you were like, you got the itch to do comedy. How did that
happen? No, oh, okay. So you don't know the story.
No.
So, okay. I went through a divorce, right,
10
years ago. It's almost my wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
In a couple weeks, it's my ninth wedding anniversary.
Okay.
And then I'm so...
Do you think she's keeping track of that, too? Or
no. It'll come up on Facebook, though, as, like, a reminder. I get these reminders. I see all, like, the little, like, you know, engagement stuff. I'm on. Okay. And by the way, the only girls I hate more than my ex-wife are every girl I've dated since her. No, she's actually really
my podcast cool, ratings are soaring with the females right now.
I know. No, we love women.
There's a sausage fest listening
women.
To this.
No, it's great. We love women. When after you go through a divorce, your whole life is kind of different, because it's like, okay, I had this whole thing where it's going to be family, this whole thing, and then when that goes away, you think, you know, you don't really care about whatever you went through divorce, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're willing to try anything, you know, somebody says skydive, okay, why not? You know, let's try something new. And so I was at the Comedy Store with Jimmy, and then I said, oh, I'd try that, you know, just on a whim. He said, okay, I'll get you up next month, you know, and then he got me up, and then first one went okay, and then I kind of retooled my act a little bit, came back a month later, did better. The third one I crushed for some reason in the OR.
Mm.
I just had one of those magic like sets that it was just bam, bam, bam. So then I got kind of hooked, and then I've been doing it ever since. And now I've done 400 shows since then, five and a half years.
Good.
You're how many years in?
17 years.
Oh my God.
How many shows? I don't know.
It's probably
my first show was in 2002, right around the time of 4th of July. Now.
And that same amount of women too. But so you've been doing probably a few thousand, maybe
I've had to do thousands,
yeah,
because there for a while, I mean, you know, I used to do 10 sets a week.
Wow.
And now
so that could be 5
yeah
minutes. Yeah,
now those were short 5-minute, 10-minute spots, right? Mm-hmm. I would go and do 2 or 3 a night a lot of times. One night I did 5.
Oh, wow.
I would kind of wish I would have lived in New York, because I hear that's regular there.
Yeah, they're walking around place to place.
But then now I do less shows, but, I mean, I'm on stage for 30 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
You know, in L.A. I'm still doing 10, 15 minutes, whatever, but when I'm traveling, like, you know, so on the weekends, you know, that's six sets, 30 minutes. Last week I did 2 hour long shows in Lake Havasu.
Oh, wow.
So
that's got to be a totally different feeling, because you just you could just stand up there and play around.
I love it. It really suits. It actually,
frankly, it works. I saw one of your online sets, and I'm all, wow, that's like a next level, because we're so limited. Like, even frankly, the biggest headliners are getting 15 minutes for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, big name headliners rarely get more than 15 minutes in LA. So
a long set suits me better.
Yeah, and I've seen that, because people get to know you while you're on stage. You start playing around more with the audience, because you're not in a hurry. Because, you know, when we're doing like a brief 7 to 12 minute set or whatever, we have to kind of hit them quickly and, you know, get done. And we get nervous if we're not getting to our material, so we got to keep rolling, you know, as opposed to when you can just play and you're a more relaxed guy, so you can just stand up there and, like, have fun. I saw you do more crowd work.
Yeah,
because you got time.
Plenty of time for crowd work. When you're photographing people, what are kind of the things you're looking for? What makes your job easier? What, you know, like...
Are we rolling? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, like, when you're photographing, you know, and doing pictures, like, and you're looking to help people get a good picture and stuff like that, you know, because, I mean, you've helped me a lot with my headshots and stuff and taking pictures. And we're friends, so it's easy for me to kind of work with you. But I was wondering, like... When you're shooting, actors, models, comedians, what kind of things make your job easier as a photographer to get a good shot?
First of all, this is one thing I've learned a lot about a lot of people. Everybody does kind of have a good side, so I try to figure out what that is. So I'll kind of slowly have them turn their head and figure out where the good angles are. Because
really?
People really do it. Yeah.
What's my good side?
Neither.
Oh, okay.
No, but I mean, that's just in general, not for everybody.
Okay, in general, okay. So.
You're good size when you're walking away.
Okay, oh, you like that, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's Hollywood, you know.
Okay,
we love that thing.
Yeah, well, I've been doing squats, okay? I've been doing squats, okay?
No, but also, you know, lighting's obviously the most important, you know, very important to really bring somebody out. I think bringing out their eyes is really important. You get a little, you know, the eyes are really the key, too.
Yeah.
You know, so you can see their eyes and kind of getting some kind of expression, working on the emotion of it. We get a variety with you. We've gotten a variety.
So many. You know, that's what's cool too, man, is like you start seeing the characters that you are, you can be, you can play.
Yeah, because for his acting stuff, we wanted to get a variety of looks and acting poses and characters and stuff, and I think we pulled it off like fairly quickly. It didn't even take that long. It's like within a few hours, walking around, getting some different backgrounds, having some different outfits and stuff.
And it's fun too, you know. It's like for me it is. I mean, a lot, you know. And it's it just helps that I know you, because I think that maybe if I don't know,
it's easier working with somebody you know, particularly in photography, because you're building up a trust.
Yeah.
And you know, it's if somebody that you don't know is telling you to do something, you might not. Why are they saying that? You know.
You know what's interesting to me too is that, you know, whenever I first see my pictures, right, I can't really look at them right away, you know, because it's like, it's kind of also like when people hear their voice, you know, it's like they don't know, you know, and then you go back and, oh yeah, it's cool, oh that's cool, or that could seem like play a detective or something, you know, and it's like sometimes, like, the more time you take away from it and you go back to it, you can see, you know.
I think that's really good. That's an important point as far as photos, like in the editing process. You know, look at them all and then slowly kind of narrow them down. Like, go through all of them and then compare them side by side. Okay, that one's better for one reason or another. And slowly, slowly narrow them down to what you like most and what's going to work best for you, I think.
Yeah.
I think that helps.
You enjoy photography?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, for me, it's very related to cinematography. And so it's part of the same art form, and it helps with framing for video work and for film work. So photography really fits in very nicely to that. And, you know, you're using the same principles, you're dealing with exposure lenses, cameras, you know, kind of stuff that, you know, I like.
So. What's your goals coming up, man?
I'm working on a few pilots right now.
Cool.
Sizzle reels. I'm going to keep developing my comedy.
Yeah.
And mainly video production. And then just trying to take everything to another level. And I'm still developing some feature films. So those are really difficult to develop if you want to get them at a reasonable budget and everything. I had Robert Duvall attached to one project, and you know, all these people came to the money, the table with money, and then they all fell through. And you know, it's tough.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. The movie, you know, the movie business is such a long process. You know, I found it to be so, like, I want to keep writing feature film scripts, but I'm like, it's a long process. You don't know if it's going to get made. Then it gets made. It doesn't look the way you thought it was going to look. And then all the personalities.
Well, that's
that is a hard thing to deal with.
Because it can go south. Even with one or two writing partners, like, you guys can have disagreements on the story and things can go south. And there's a lot of pitfalls. It really all comes down to the money and then having creative control if you want to get your own vision on screen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not easy, man. It's not easy. You know, I wrote a movie that got made, and the process of it getting made, like, it kind of made me lose my zest and excitement for the business, you know. Where I feel with stand-up, I was going up there and doing it, you know what I mean? Like, you have...
So that's the thing. You have complete creative control.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's telling you what to do. Nobody's telling you what to say. You can make your own work, you know, work on stage, and then you're not dealing with a million other personalities that are kind of telling you how to do something. And you're not dealing with a million people working on something, or a lot of people working on something that can bring down the quality level. Like, it's amazing that any film gets made with great quality, and then that's why they win an Oscar, because they made it to the screen very well done without one piece of it falling apart, you know.
Yeah.
And anything can bring down a film. Like, the acting can bring, the writing, directing, you know, photography, anything can really affect a film.
So. I know, there's so many variables. I mean, the actors are such a big part of it. They really have to, you know, because it's like, man, one delivery of a line incorrectly takes you right out of the film.
Yeah. But that's where the editing can save it. Like,
editing
can make or break a film. Because frankly, if I wanted to affect a performance, I could add a, you know, hair there, here or there. And if you just add a beat, it takes something from being real to not. Like, let's say we're talking right now, and all of a sudden you say something like, ask me a question.
Hey, how was your day?
It was great. Like, that pause affects the whole thing of what we're talking about.
Yes.
So, you know, little pauses here and there, like frames, can affect the editing of something. So you can really affect a performance with the editing big time. You can make or break the film and the editing, particularly documentaries, but even in, you know, dramatic films too.
So. Yeah, I could imagine in documentaries, because it's real, so you got to figure out how to... Now, how did you learn to edit? How did you...
Trial by fire. Well, I went to school. I graduated UCSD in Media Visual Arts.
The University of California, San Diego?
Yeah, UCSD. Okay. And then came up here to work, and I started working. I created or helped develop a campaign for CBS, and then I got booked at an advertising firm, and then I edited thousands of promos, and I started writing all the promos, and... I kind of have a natural aptitude for editing, I think.
Yeah.
So it kind of helped, but then you get better over time too, like anything else. And then,
Yeah, that's cool. No, the editing, it can change. I've seen, you know, with some short, especially because I did that 48-hour film festival with that Nick does for the disabilities.
Yeah, that's great.
And we had a film the first year I did it, back when I did one about my friend in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first time doing a 48-hour festival thing, which is pretty difficult, you know. And the script was kind of all over the place because I had just such a short time to write it. And in editing, the guy kind of found somewhat of a story we could use. And that's when I really started realizing
the
difference.
The editing.
And it's one thing, too, I learned was that, so, you know, as far as being an actor in a project, right, your continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that if your continuity doesn't match up, it's hard for the editor. So, for instance, if one take I go like this and I grab my shirt, and then the next takes I don't do it, that could be a problem. Or
it could be, but that's where hopefully a good director will know that to create cutaways or some way to work around it.
Okay.
Like I Michael Madsen on a short, and he was improvising a little bit, and he's a great actor and stuff, but it made the editing a little tougher, but it also brought the performance to another level too. So there are trade-offs, but like, continuity is a good thing to have, but if you're improvising something, the continuity is hard. And frankly, you see continuity get blown at all levels. You know, big.
Well, I know I worked on a Lincoln Lawyer as a stand-in, you know, and there was a scene in there. I forget. It had something to do with milk. And the one scene, McConaughey's drinking a milk or something. And then the next scene, there is no milk around or something. Like, you know, it's just like, I caught that. But I don't know if the average person, you know.
Most people don't. But there are books on that that have all the Easter eggs of like, oh, all the errors in films. Because there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, it's so tough, man. You're working for 12 hours. I mean.
Well, sometimes you're doing the same scene on a different day. You might not remember what you did. Like, people alter their performance. Like, the timing. Particularly, this is what I hate. When somebody's at a restaurant eating and like you could see, like, oh, the glass is empty, the glass is full, the food's there, the food's gone, like, he's smoking, that's gone.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
it's kind of
annoying.
Yeah, it does get annoying. Like,
yeah.
Because you want it to be perfect, but, you know.
Man.
You know, then you make the trade-off. Like, for the edit, the drama of the scene might override that somebody's doing something that doesn't match up very well. So
you got to fix it.
Yeah. Or in a perfect world, you know, a good director will plan ahead for that kind of thing and have maybe cutaway to somebody sitting there, like, that, you know, to fix that. But it's trade-offs.
Yeah. I said one thing, too, I've noticed about a lot of projects is they get people are gung-ho to film a project, get a project going. But in editing, I've seen so many what happened to that film? I've been an actor in so many things.
Yeah,
it's like,
and
oh, it's time to
done.
Edit. Oh, it's done.
Like,
yeah,
I'm impressed whenever somebody creates something and completes it instead of, oh yeah, we started it and never got done with it.
Right? Man, I see so many. I mean, I've been
happens all the time.
Yeah, and it's like now a lot of times. I mean, I'm almost with some projects, you know, the ones that I don't know. So sometimes I'm like, man, do I really want to get involved? Because are they gonna finish?
Right.
Like, you know. It's a major thing.
Frankly, that's why, like, I've been working at this so long that I've kind of tried to learn all the aspects of it so I can pick up the pieces
right.
if somebody else can't. Like, I'm doing all computer animated music video right now. Two of them.
Okay.
All 3D animated. We're flying through frames and stuff. And, you know, I don't need anybody else for that. I'm you know, if I shoot a music video, I know I can finish it in post. I can edit and do the audio and stuff. So I've tried to be able to be very self-sufficient. Like, you know, I've done enough photography and filming that I could film it all myself. I don't need to hire a DP. I don't need to hire a cameraman if I can avoid it, you know.
Yeah.
So I've tried to eliminate jobs everywhere I can, you know, to make it that I can complete projects the way I want to do it if I need to.
Yeah, that's
it. But it's always best to hire a crew you're happy with, too. Like, and you can find, there's a lot of good people out there.
Your hands could always use a hand.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's better people. There's better cinematographers than I am, so it's good to hire people when I can.
Always hire up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
man.
I think we've said it all here.
Yeah, Gary. Dude.
But no, it's a great time. Thanks for having
thanks
me on the podcast.
On, man.
We're going to...
Learned a lot.
Yeah, we'll be playing the clubs all around LA when he's not on tour, and at some point I'll be touring around a little more.
Yeah.
But it's always fun doing stand-up with you. And,
yeah, buddy. You too, man.
And I'll be predicting more of the girls you'll be dating.
Okay.
Trying not to get sloppy seconds with you, which is the impossible dream. So.
Hey, what time is it?
It's swine time.
Thank you guys for tuning in.